This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. The United States and Iran have decades of animosity between them, but the already fraught relationship between the two countries became even more strained just days into 2020 when President Trump ordered a drone strike that killed one of Iran's top generals.
We took decisive action to stop a ruthless terrorist from threatening American lives. At my direction, the United States military eliminated the world's top terrorist, Qasem Soleimani. As the head of the Quds Force, Soleimani was personally responsible for some of the absolutely worst atrocities.
Now, Trump said in addition to killing Soleimani, he was implementing a new round of economic sanctions against Iran. Trump called Soleimani a terrorist, but he had high-ranking and official roles in Iran's government and military. The targeted killing of another nation's leader led many to wonder if the United States was on the brink of war. Senator Bernie Sanders, campaigning in Iowa at the time, called Soleimani's killing an assassination.
This is a dangerous escalation that brings us closer to another disastrous war in the Middle East, which could cost countless lives and trillions more dollars and lead to even more death, more conflict, more displacement in that already highly volatile region of the world.
Iran promised retaliation, and a few days later it struck two U.S. bases in Iraq. Initial reports from the U.S. president that there had been no casualties proved to be untrue. But since then, there's an uneasy hold on the escalating tensions. And President Trump has sought to use rhetoric to convey a different message to the people of Iran than he's been using with the government.
To the people and leaders of Iran, we want you to have a future, and a great future, one that you deserve. One of prosperity at home and harmony with the nations of the world. The United States is ready to embrace peace with all who seek it.
So what is it like to be living in the United States right now when you have strong ties to Iran? Let's turn to Atta Anzali. He's an associate professor of religion at Middlebury College. He teaches courses on the history of religions, Islamic traditions, and the history of religion in Iranian history. He grew up in Iran and came to the U.S. as a grad student in 2006. He and his wife have raised their children in this country, and 9 months ago, he became the last member of his family to become a U.S. citizen. Professor Anzali, it's nice to talk with you again. Thank you for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Jane. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, one thing that has been clear is that this escalation of the conflict between Iran and the United States is having a much deeper and greater impact on people who live in Iran than Americans who live in the United States. Can you talk a little bit from your perspective over what you're seeing about what that's like to know that this is something that is affecting the people of Iran, especially with increased economic sanctions from the United States and military activities occurring in that region?
Sure. Well, obviously, like this country, Iran is it's a big country, and like you have diverse opinions there. But what I can tell you from my own experience is that, like, I keep in contact with my high school friends, you know, we kind of get together on social media. And what I've kind of realized, especially in the past few weeks, is really a sense of deep hopelessness. And to give you a sense of like what I mean by that is like when you're I'm 44 years old, and so are my friends. And when you're 44, you have a family, you have kids, and you start thinking about going out of the country, I think that gives you a sense of how kind of how impactful these things are for people. You know, when you've experienced economic sanctions for decades, and when you feel like it's getting worse and worse, and there is no light at the end of tunnel. That, at least for the group of friends that I have, creates this situation where they really, I feel like there are lots of them are pretty depressed in terms of like thinking about their kids' future. And God forbid if something like a war happens and like the destabilization of the whole region. And yeah, I think that's just that's one thing that I've seen. There is also a sense of growing frustration, and I really wonder about the generational impact of these prolonged confrontations in terms of how many Iranians and Americans, to be honest, are going to set up their mind in a certain way, thinking about who the quote-unquote enemy is and what they're supposed to do. So I feel like this, even though the events of the past few weeks, I mean, now we are on a de-escalation kind of route, it seems like, but I do worry about the generational impact and how these events are going to be used in later years to either as propaganda or just as memory and history for people to kind of think about, like, who is their friend, who is their enemy, where they are, like, and that's kind of really dispiriting for me.
When you talk to your friends and you say they feel an increasing sense of hopelessness, I mean, does that mean they don't see, not only do they not see an end to it particularly or potentially, but also that there's no agency to do anything about it, to, you know, to change? And certainly for anybody, thinking about moving would be a massive disruption, but also just sort of that sense of, I have no agency in this situation. Is that what they're feeling?
Yeah, I think that is what they're feeling, a lack of agency. And maybe more to the point is this question of, I mean, there are lots of people in Iran. I mean, obviously, the Islamic Republic has a base. There are people who are supportive, but there are many people who are very critical of this current government. What is really frustrating, I think, like when I talk to my friends, is the lack of any alternative. In a way, you know, like they think, you know, like even if they disagree with what is happening in Iran politically, with the government, with the regime, they can't really do anything because they don't think there is a viable alternative. And I think the alternative they see is basically something like a civil war. And that's kind of what they're afraid of. And I feel like when an administration like the current administration doubles down on sanctions and makes people's lives so difficult in Iran, a side effect of that is basically, you know, like you're kind of making people suffer twice. One is because of the sanctions. The other thing is, like, they really are scared if something like Syria happens in Iran, right? You know, like, and then, you know, like the future will be even worse. So I think that lack of agency is a little bit more specific to the condition of Iran and in terms of, like, what is happening around in that region in terms of this, you know, kind of how, like, American involvement in countries around has created so much chaos and lack of stability, and what would happen if that was the case in Iran.
You know, Atta, when we were trying to come up with what we were going to do today, one of our original plans had been to have you and to have a member of UVM's Iranian Student Association and maybe others who have ties to Iran on the show to talk about, you know, what is it like to live here right now, and what is it like to sort of not live in two spaces but be connected to two places that are in such tension with each other. And we thought we had a student from UVM's Iranian Student Association, but after discussion with the group, that guest decided not to participate in the show at all, and nobody from the group was going to come on because they were really concerned about what speaking publicly could mean for their family in Iran, but also for the families of other students in the association, even if they weren't publicly speaking. You know, what can you talk about that fear and that concern just about the safety of the people you care about?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I can't speak. I mean, I understand that experience, and I can talk about, you know, but this would be my perspective. I don't want to kind of impose this on people. What I can tell you about that is, honestly, let me connect it to what just happened yesterday. So, if you've been following the news, just there was an Iranian student who was admitted to Northeastern University, like he studied here 2 years, and then went back to see his family. He had to reapply for visa. He reapplied for visa to get into the U.S. again and continue his education. And he just received a visa after waiting for 1 year and comes back to restart his education. And he's detained in Boston Logan Airport last night and then deported, even though he had a valid visa. And this is not just one incident. Like, these kinds of incidents are happening, like, as they have been happening since August, like, for more than a dozen Iranian students. So I understand Iranian students, in a way, they are in a double bind. On the one hand, they have family back home in Iran. And with the increasing globalization and kind of the role of social media, they are afraid what the impact of what they might say would be on their families back home. But also, I think they're afraid of the impact of what they say and their social media presence has on their status in this country. It's not just about people in the Islamic Republic are going to hear this and they're going to create problems for our families back then. That is, I think, a concern that many people have. But there is also a question of what happens, when I have a valid legal status in the United States and then I come into a port of entry and then, there is basically no recourse. The CBP, they can decide to the Customs and Border Protection to deport you. And they have done that a dozen times in the past few months. And in some ways, you are always double guessing yourself in terms of, I am here legally. But there is this suspicion of, there's something about, especially the approach of this administration that makes you think about, this is not just about legal, illegal. This is really about discriminating against a community here that's kind of, most of the people that Iranians, are really successful, contributing to the society in highest levels. And it's just heartbreaking to see how they have to suffer, not only because they have loved ones in Iran and they're afraid of what the impact of their actions here would be for them, but also, even though we kind of are proud of the rule of law here in this country, even though you have done everything right and you have followed every legal requirement that the administration had put forward in front of you, that you're not safe. And I feel in my own case, a number of years ago, when the travel ban started, this administration's first really presidential announcement was that travel ban against a number of Muslim countries, including Iran. I was in Iran and I was caught up in spite of the fact that I had a permanent residency at the time, a green card. And I was not sure how to explain that to my kids. I have a daughter who is 14 years old, another daughter who is 11, and they think of this country as their home. And when they, when they think about this country and now they have to think twice about whether they belong here and whether they can take that for granted. So I think it's just on both sides. It's like the expression goes, being stuck between a hard and a hard place and a rock. So that's kind of I can't obviously comment on the specific reasons why these friends didn't feel comfortable, but that's kind of what I can tell you from my own experience.
Did those questions about being able to come and go freely have an impact on your decision to become a U.S. citizen? Because as you mentioned, you got caught up in Iran when that sort of initial iteration of the travel ban briefly went into place. And we spoke with you then. And mm-hmm. So you weren't yet a U.S. citizen. Yep. Even now we're hearing that some Iranian Americans who have U.S. citizenship are still being questioned. But did that have was that part of your decision-making process?
Part of my decision-making process in terms of becoming a U.S. citizen?
Yeah, that ability to have at least more mm-hmm. security mm-hmm. in being yeah. able to stay in this country.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, that was Yeah, an important part of that decision, you know, having the legal protections as a citizen, you know, like in this country, that was a major part of this decision. But, you know, let me tell you a little bit more about that, because I feel like, you know, like I came to this country as a graduate student to study religion. And I came here not with the, I didn't want at the time or didn't plan on staying here. But after I finished my PhD, I realized that this country with the freedoms that it offers would be a better place for me professionally to do research and to teach about religion. I mean, Iran being a theocracy, obviously, there are lots of kind of limitations as in, you know, kind of about like what you can teach, what you can research when it comes to religion. So, I mean, that I really was grateful and appreciative of the fact that there are institutions of higher education in this country that, you know, I could freely pursue my interests and passion. But at the same time, you know, like becoming a U.S. citizen, one feeling that I really had in the past few weeks was, you know, like given the pain and the suffering we went through, kind of just watching this whole kind of warmongering go on, we thought of, you know, like the pain also came with a sense of guilt. And what I mean by that is, you know, like I kind of thought about that decision I made to become a U.S. citizen, you know, like given the prospect of a war and, you know, like when you have a choice to become a citizen of a country, that kind of like conscious decision is on your mind. And you think about like when you make that decision, are you like, are you endorsing these kind of foreign policy approaches of a country like America? And I'm not saying Iran is blameless, but that was like, so yes, it was part of my decision to kind of have the legal protections and kind of travel back and forth easier. But at the same time, these kinds of incidences really psychologically complicate this issue.
Yeah, I imagine so. And I imagine, you know, speaking the oath that you have to do when you become a citizen is a challenging thing just to think about in your own head, I would imagine.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you talking with us and hope that we can continue this conversation as, you know, as things continue to develop. And I appreciate your willingness, despite what you talk about with the challenges that people often feel in coming forward and being public and speaking about this. So, Atta, I really appreciate your willingness to open up your life and your thoughts with us today.
Thank you so much, Jane. I appreciate being on the show.